The great Amsuman saw that the sage named Kapila, the saint who is an incarnation of Vishnu, sitting there by the horse. Amsuman offered him respectful obeisances, folded his hands, and offered him prayers with great attention. Amsuman said, "My Lord, even Lord Brahma is to this very day unable to understand your position, which is far beyond himself, either by meditation or by mental speculation. So what to speak of others like us, who have been created by Brahma in various forms as demigods, animals, human beings, birds, and beasts? We are completely in ignorance. Therefore, how can we know you, who are the transcendence?" Report by Srila Prabhupada. Icha dvesha mutsamuttena dvanda mohena bharata sarvabhutani sammoham sargeyanti parantapa. O scion of Bharata, Arjun, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. Bhagavad Gita 7:27. All living beings in the material world are influenced by the three modes of material nature. Even Lord Brahma is in the mode of goodness. Similarly, the demigods are generally in the mode of passion, and the living entities lower than the demigods, such as human beings and animals, are in the mode of ignorance or in mixed goodness, passion, and ignorance. Therefore, Amsuman wanted to explain that because his uncles, who had burned to ashes, were under the modes of material nature, they could not understand Lord Kapila Dev. "Because you are beyond even the direct and indirect intelligence of Lord Brahma," he prayed, "unless we are enlightened by your lordships, it will not be possible for us to understand you." Atapite deva padam bhujad dvayam prasada leshana gratihi evahi janati tattvam bhagavan mahim no nachanya eko pichiram vichinvan. "My Lord, if one is favored even by a slight trace of your mercy, of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years." Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, 14th Chapter, Text 29. The Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can be understood by one who is favored by the Lord. The Lord cannot be understood by others. Oma Gyana Tamarandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So this chapter entitled "The Sons of Sagara Meet Lord Kapila Dev," and in this verse we have the second set of sons of Sagara Maharaj. His first sons, they numbered some tens of thousands, I think, altogether, if anyone would. 60,000 sons. When they met Lord Kapila Dev, they achieved one end, and that's described here, that following the same path traversed by his uncle Amsuman, gradually reached the stack of ashes. And so the 60,000 sons of Sagara Maharaj, when they met Lord Kapila Dev, they were burned to ashes. And the Prabhupada and the text of Srimad Bhagavatam actually both explained that it wasn't that Lord Kapila Dev burnt them to ashes by his glance, but that they burned themselves, the heat of their body, the fire element in their body, or ignited due to their offenses to a great personality, Lord Kapila Dev. And so they turned to a heap of ashes in their meeting with Lord Kapiladeva. Now, the second son, and we say son, although they were the sons of, actually the sons of Asamanjasa, they're not the direct sons of Sagara, but still they're the sons of Sagara. When Amsuman, the son, when he met, or was he the actual son, or was he the son of the Asamanja? He was a son of Asamanja. Right. So the grandson of Sagara Maharaj. When he met Lord Kapiladeva, that's what's being described in today's verse. And obviously there is a different conclusion, and it's based on his qualifications. Lord Kapiladeva, the incarnation of Vishnu, cannot be understood, cannot be approached by an ordinary person. One has to have some adhikar or some qualification to approach, what to speak of understand. So what is the difference? What is the difference? What is the qualitative difference between Amsuman's meeting and the meeting of the other sons of Maharaj Sagara? That's the topic. If we take Amsuman, the grandson of Maharaj Sagara, his father, Asamanjasa, he's described as great. He's described as great, and Amsuman is also described as great. But how their great differs, and their activities show that. Asamanja was a great mystic yogi. And as described in class on Monday, he used that power, that qualification, in ways to cause trouble to others. He with drowned boys playing, actually. Basically, that's what he did. He drowned them. So he's very powerful. He was great in one sense, but he misused that power, and therefore his father became disgusted with him, gave up affection for him, and actually banished him from his kingdom. But just to show, almost just to show that he was a very powerful person, and to almost mock his father and the others in the kingdom, all those boys that he had thrown in the river and drowned, he brought them back to life, because he was such a powerful mystic yogi. He brought them back to life. Naturally, everyone was happy, and even Maharaj Sagara lamented at that point having banished his son, understanding his greatness, but he didn't come back. And so that's the type of a greatness. Of course, the 60,000 sons also, they were very valiant heroes. They were actually able to search the entire world looking for this sacrificial horse. So they had some greatness also, but that greatness blinded them. And so these types of greatness of the 60,000 sons, and then of Asamanjasa, these are greatnesses that are born of the modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. But when approaching Lord Kapiladeva, the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, can't really help us. They can't help us get any clear understanding of the Lord. And more than not just helping us, they can also cause us to create offenses to great personalities and thus incur the wrath of the Supreme Lord himself. We talked about this a little bit last time I gave class about offenses and how they are so detrimental to one on the path of devotional service. And certainly they block anyone else's understanding of the Supreme Lord, as explained by Prabhupada in a purport today. So Amsuman was different in that he wasn't affected by the three modes of material nature. He's described as great also, Mahan, Asuman, the great personality. But what was his greatness? What was his greatness as compared to the others? Can anybody say what his greatness was? It's kind of a trick question. He had a different kind of greatness. It's almost counterintuitive, his greatness, because his greatness was his humility. In terms of spiritual endeavors, the greatest quality is humility, which is sort of runs counter to what generally is considered to be great in this material world. People that are great, just like the 60,000 sons that were burnt to ashes, they were valiant heroes, warriors who could fight with any enemy. They were physically strong, mentally sharp. And then Asamanjasa, he was a mystic yogi, had great powers. He could bring people back from the dead. These things were their greatness, and so materially these things are considered what makes one great. A birth in a good family, high education, wealth, all these things are sources of pride for the materialist. But for the devotee of the Lord, greatness is a different thing. Greatness is judged by one's humility. And we see this happening here. Amsuman, when he approached Lord Kapiladeva, he explained in a very humble way what is his actual position. He said that, "So what to speak of others like us who have been created by Lord Brahma in various forms as demigods, animals, human beings, birds, and beasts? We are completely in ignorance. Therefore, how can we know you who are the transcendence?" So, admitting one's ignorance requires some humility. Flaunting one's ignorance, boasting of one's material capabilities, is simply an indication of one's ignorance. Krishna describes, actually, in Bhagavad Gita that one of the very first symptoms of a person in knowledge is that he's humble. And we see this again and again and again in the pastimes of the Lord, that those who are actually in knowledge, those who actually have some access to approaching the Supreme Lord, they can do that because they're humble. And they're humble because they have knowledge of their actual position. If we look at the meeting, for instance, of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, well, of course, the first meeting between the Goswamis, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Anupama, was when the Lord was traveling on his way to Vrindavan, and he went through Bengal, and he met the three brothers. When they first met the Lord, they all three of them, put straw between their teeth and offered dandavat, full obeisances to the Lord. expressing in a physical way their submission to the Lord. Try to understand such a great people as the Goswamis, putting straw between their teeth and falling flat on the ground. I think if we try to think of the Goswamis knowing who they are and then seeing them do that, it gives us some idea of how Lord Chaitanya felt when he was, when his great devotees approached him with such humility, and he would tell them that your humility is breaking my heart. Please don't act like that. You know, you're showing so much humility that it's actually not disturbing, but something that you want a relief from, such humility. And then again, when Sanatana Goswami was instructed by the Lord in Prayag, when he met him, he again put straw between his teeth and fell at his feet, and then he recited these very famous verses, which describe his knowledge expressed through humility. He said, Nij jati nij sangi patita adama kubishaya kupe padi goinainu janama. Sanatana Goswami said, I am born in a low family, and my associates are all low-class men. I myself am fallen and in the lowest of men. Indeed, I have passed my whole life fallen in the well of sinful materialism. He says, I do not know what is beneficial for me and what is detrimental. Nonetheless, in ordinary dealings, people consider me a learned scholar, and I am also thinking of myself as such. And so this is the influence of spiritual knowledge. One understands in a very deep way one's disqualifications. Indeed, that's all one can really see about himself. Obviously, Sanatana Goswami was not a disqualified person, but he actually considered himself, and he considered himself in terms of his body, nij jati, born in a low family, nij sangi, his association with low-class men. These things are disqualifications for spiritual life, so-called disqualifications for spiritual life. One would think that if one's going to get the highest thing, spiritual life, that that one's background, one's education, one's association would be important. But all those things, materially driven, were possessed by Maharaj Pratapurja, but the Lord Chaitanya didn't even want to see him. He didn't want to see him at all. He didn't want to have anything to do with one that had high birth, good education, physical beauty, great wealth. These things which are make one great materially are disqualifications spiritually. And so Sanatana Goswami expressed how he felt that because those things were part of his background, he was fallen and therefore unqualified. So he's seeing himself unqualified by this expression of his humility, but that's actually the hallmark of his qualification, rejecting all these things as being impediments for actually seeing the Supreme Lord, thinking oneself very learned. Actually, humility has two aspects. One aspect is as a way of obtaining knowledge, and the other aspect is as showing that one indeed has knowledge. As a way of attaining knowledge, we're advised that to surrender ourselves to a devotee of the Lord, to an advanced devotee of the Lord. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Tadviri Panipatena Pariprasneva Sevaya Upadakshanti Te Ganam Ganinas Tattvadarshanam. The first thing you need to do to attain spiritual knowledge is to give up your false pride and surrender or become humble before a devotee of the Lord and learn and hear from that devotee. So humility is a way of knowledge. It's a way of understanding things as they are. We cannot understand things as they are in an arrogant, brash way. The material energy is far more bewildering than we're able to conquer with our puny intelligence. And actually anyone that's really got some intelligence understands that, even materially. I think, didn't Einstein say something like, I can't understand the universe or something. I understand how limited my knowledge is by approaching just universal knowledge, seeing how small I am. And even the quote that we have on the back of the Bhagavad Gita, Henry David Thoreau says that in the morning I bathe my intellect in the stupendous and cosmogonal philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, in comparison which our modern world and its literature seem puny and trivial. So those that are actually in knowledge, actually approaching knowledge, they can understand that. What qualification have we got? What can we actually learn? What can we actually gain by our puny intelligence compared to the vastness of spiritual knowledge? Knowledge is humility is a way of attaining knowledge. By humbling yourself, then you open up doors to actually being able to understand the reality. And humility is also a symptom of one who has knowledge. And it makes a big difference, just like the 60,000 sons of Sagar Mars were burned to ashes because they didn't approach with humility. But here, Amsuman, we see he approaches with humility, and he's able to appease the Lord and satisfy the purpose of his father, of Mara Sagara, to get the horse back from the ashram of Kapila, Lord Kapila Dev. And so one who is actually in knowledge, their symptoms will be shown, how they act, what their behavior is like will be shown. And it will be very submissive and humble behavior. And again, we see that in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All those great devotees, they were never proud, and they're never shown like that. Haridas Thakur, the Goswamis, always maintaining such a humble demeanor and interaction with not only the Lord, but with all living beings. There's an interesting story told by Trivikram Swami that also shows this aspect in Srila Prabhupada's life. In the early days when they were in London, I think it must have been 1969 or so, Prabhupada was giving a series of lectures. I think they were the Conway Hall lectures. And Trivikram Maharaj was massaging Srila Prabhupada during that time. And so he was massaging him leading up to one of the lectures that were scheduled for that evening. And he said he felt like he was a trainer getting a fighter ready for the fight, you know. And so he was massaging him, and he was telling Prabhupada, you know, how great he was and how he was going to smash him in the lecture and everything like that, and sort of building up this view of Prabhupada as a conquering preacher. And of course we know that that is Srila Prabhupada, but when Trivikram Swami was in this mood like that, all of a sudden Prabhupada stopped and said, "No, I'm just the humble servant of my spiritual master." And it's sort of like, Trivikram Maharaj describes it, like popped the balloon of that image that he was building up of Srila Prabhupada. And he could understand that the humility, the whole point of the story is about Prabhupada's humility, that is what was his real character, not that he was a proud scholar like the Digvijays that go around in historical India defeating everyone with their knowledge. No, but simply he was a humble servant And so even in the life of Srila Prabhupada, we see that those, the same idea, that those with real knowledge, when you see their behavior, demeanor, it's a very, very humble, humble demeanor. Again, it's a story that's told many times, and I think it was told just recently also about the devotees in the airport, and Rupa Nuga stood up and said, "All devotees must move to the other side," because the airlines was complaining or something like that. And Srila Prabhupada was the first one to stand up and, you know, ready to move. And Rupa Nuga said, no, not you, Srila Prabhupada, you don't have to move. But that was Prabhupada's natural reaction. He felt himself the humble servant of his guru, and didn't act in a proud and puffed up manner. So humility is the symptom of one who has knowledge. That is confirmed again by Amsuman here, as he has approached Lord Kapila Dev, and we'll read more about what happens between the two of them in the coming verses. So, are there any comments or questions about this subject matter? Yes, Mother Kirti.
It's just not there most of the time. And so are there some exercises that you can do to like bring it out or develop it?
Well, I think living in the Association of Devotees is a good exercise in becoming humble. Take a management position. Become humble quickly. I think that you're correct in that humility is something we need to cultivate. We may have different talents and abilities that are God-given to us, and all of us have different talents and abilities. And so we could spend our time cultivating them in the service of Krishna. But maybe a better use of our time is cultivating, actually practicing humility, trying to be introspective about what we do and how we can approach the situation a little bit more, and ultimately just cultivating knowledge, hearing from Bhagavad Gita, hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, hearing from Srila Prabhupada. Cultivating knowledge like this automatically makes us humble, because we realize how insignificant we really are. And sometimes that's difficult if we have a particular talent or something like that. We have a talent and we want to use that talent in the service of Krishna. But unless we can develop humility, then that same talent may be the cause of us forgetting Krishna. So cultivating knowledge and endeavoring to be humble. Again, just recently, I think, again, someone in class mentioned about how in the old days, I think it was Kripa Sindhu, also on Monday, he was saying about how everyone used to offer obeisances to each other, and you know, that was a daily part of our practice. One of the things when we become familiar is that we give up some of those cultivating practices, and we lose the opportunity to actually become humble. So, yeah, it has to be cultivated. Mother Lakshmimoni, you had something to say?
Yes, one thought I had is that, you know, thinking about what humility looks like, because we have sometimes a conception of humility as someone who's very, you know what I mean, kind of afraid to do things, or, you know, cowering kind of, I don't know words to use to describe it, I think you understand it. And that definition that I heard was that I use a lot, that I heard from somebody, was that humility means not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. So trying to consider how you and your talents and all your gifts can be used in the service of others is humility, not so much thinking how unqualified you are.
Yeah, and just what it looks like, I think Well, we have examples of devotees that we see that are truly empowered in their ability to spread Krishna consciousness, and when we observe them, we can observe them and see how they act, and we can see humility in that way. So that's what I meant when I said living among the association devotees. We get a chance to view the behavior of great devotees, not that they make us humble by their chastisements. Yes.
So, like you say, an appreciation of seeing other devotees having that attitude of humility and tolerance, and appreciating that. So by that you make advancement, even though yourself you're not, you know, year after year you're not advancing, you know, you see yourself in the same hold, you know, like, when am I going to get there? It's like, well, you know, then you see other devotees and you appreciate, you know, with the heart that, you know, that person is very faithful to Krishna, very dedicated, very devotional, humble.
Yeah, well, what do you do when you see that? When you see somebody like that, then the urge is to, like, well, I want to be like that. You want to aspire for their level of behavior, and you want to serve them. That's our method. By serving them, also, we're inspired by someone, and so then we want to serve them. And by serving them, we get their mercy, and then we get their, we can start to gain some of the qualities that they have as well. So that's sort of the active cultivation that I think Madhavakuti is asking about, by observing. And that's our position with Srila Prabhupada, isn't it? We see such a humble, dedicated servant of the Lord. We're inspired by that. We want to be like that. So therefore we serve him, try to please him, and his mercy comes on us, and we can gain some of those qualities in our own life. So the devotional service has that kind of dynamic, and it's based on service. And so we serve the great devotees, and that way we make advancement.
A devotee like that, that is very advanced, then you see someone pushes your buttons, he's like, oh, you know, you just go off track completely, and it's like, oh, you get upset and you start committing offenses again, and it's like,
well, then we can turn to those are good examples we see and how they've exhibited tolerance. We can think about how Prabhupada exhibited so much tolerance with us, you know, and then therefore we should be a little tolerant as well. Yeah, go ahead.
One problem is that the great devotees don't want you to serve them. So when you want to serve them, they don't let you.
Well, did that stop Narottam Das Thakur? Lochan Das Thakur? Lokanath Goswami. He didn't want him to serve him either, but he found a way to serve. Not that he was looking. In other words, he didn't want to be recognized that I'm doing service. He just did service. And so we can also do service. We did an exercise like that in the GBC meeting last year where everyone was given someone to serve. You remember that? Everyone was given someone to serve. And you're supposed to serve without them knowing that you're doing it. And so everyone was getting all this service from others. And I thought it was interesting. It gives you a chance to serve your god brothers without, you know, being either them rejecting it because you're their god brother or because for whatever reason, gave you the opportunity to do that. And then to receive service also takes some practice. I think we err if we're too ready to receive service, you know. Yeah, okay, I'm ready, you know, come serve me. I think we better that, you know, you practice to receive it, and if you don't know who it's coming from, it might be easier. I still don't know who was providing that for me, but I got Radhana Swami, so I was happy to see that name. Yeah, okay. Huh? Well, I hope so. Any other points? Yes.
Indirect intelligence.
Direct and indirect intelligence
of Lord Brahma.
Here, it described that here. Let's see. it said that even Lord, because you are beyond even the direct and indirect intelligence of Lord Brahma, he prayed, unless we are enlightened by your lordship, it will not be possible for us to understand you. So the direct and indirect intelligence of Lord Brahma, anybody have some thoughts on that? Direct, what is the meaning of direct and indirect? He talks about different methods by which Lord Brahma could have understood him. Meditation, mental speculation. So direct might be our own mental capacities, our own physical abilities to try to understand. Indirect may be through meditation, trying to understand through getting some type of mercy that's generally we see mercy from superior persons, but mercy from superior persons who aren't a transcendental source may be an example of an indirect intelligence. As opposed to one's own capabilities, if one goes to some kind of teacher or something, and that teacher, again, we're talking about teachers that are not in the transcendental realm, but receiving knowledge from them may be some indirect kind of way of exercising our intelligence. And so neither by that type of endeavor or direct endeavor, using our own intelligence or senses, can the Lord be understood. Even in the case of Lord Brahma, where those powers are obviously very, very great. Yes?
The straw between their teeth, is that a actual physical way that people did?
Well, there's a picture, and it's not in Goswami right here, with a straw between his teeth. So, yeah, I think that physically done, maybe at that particular point in time, in history and culture and custom, that was indicative of taking oneself. What would be the equivalent today of doing that?
Yeah, that was my second question. Here in America.
Here in America? I don't know, they're not very humble here, so they're not very practiced, so they don't have the... practices, but I think the situation of the heart, the humble situation of the heart, is what it indicates, and we can know that ourselves in our own lives, when we're humble and when we're not, what we're thinking, you know, like, who's this person, you know, they're going to tell me something, or, you know, we have a different kind of attitude that, you know, well, let me hear what has to be said. Okay, I'm going to write you my Bhagavatam.